the only one that hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a European Union health official said Tuesday there was no indication that the AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine caused blood clots in some people. Emer Cook, the head of the European Medicines Agency, spoke to reporters Tuesday. She said there was no indication that vaccination has caused these conditions. The EMA director added, "While the investigation is ongoing, we are currently still firmly convinced that the benefits of the AstraZeneca vaccine in preventing COVID-19 with its associated risk of hospitalization outweigh the risk of the side effects." The statement came after Sweden and Latvia became the latest European countries to suspend use of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Anders Tegnell of the Swedish Public Health Agency said earlier on Tuesday, "The decision is a precautionary measure." He added, "Sweden would wait for the results of the European Medicines Agency's study." Denmark, Iceland, and Norway were the first countries to temporarily stop using the vaccine. Ireland announced a similar decision over the weekend. On Monday, France, Germany, Spain, and Italy were among the countries that suspended use of the vaccine. Their decision came after reports of bleeding and blood clots among those who received the vaccine made by AstraZeneca with the University of Oxford. AstraZeneca had said earlier that there is no evidence its vaccine carries an increased risk of blood clots. By March 8th, there have been 37 reports of blood clots among the more than 17 million people who have received the vaccine across the EU and Britain, the company said. Ann Taylor is AstraZeneca's chief medical officer. She added, "The number of cases of blood clots reported in this group is lower than the hundreds of cases that would be expected among the general population." Both the World Health Organization and the European Medicines Agency said they are studying the cases. The AstraZeneca vaccine is one of three vaccines approved for emergency use in Europe. The other two are made by the companies Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna. In the United States, health officials have approved vaccines from Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson for emergency use. AstraZeneca is planning to seek U.S. government approval in the coming months. When the AstraZeneca vaccine was approved for emergency use in Britain last December, the shot was described as the vaccine for the world. The vaccine costs much less than those from Pfizer and Moderna. It also does not require extreme cold storage, making it easier to use in countries with limited resources. COVAX is an international program to deploy coronavirus vaccines to poor people around the world. Last month, the program sent its first supply of 600,000 shots made by AstraZeneca to the African country of Ghana. Others have gone to Nigeria, Kenya, and the Asian countries of the Philippines and Indonesia. The program hopes to provide at least 2 billion shots, mainly from AstraZeneca, especially to poor countries around the world. The largest user of AstraZeneca's vaccine, however, is India. The country is home to the Serum Institute of India, where most of the AstraZeneca vaccine is manufactured. Health officials reported that over 23.4 million people have received the AstraZeneca shot in India. That is out of 25.6 million people who have been vaccinated in that country. Health officials told the Press Trust of India news agency on Saturday that 234 cases of adverse events had been reported after receiving any vaccine. That number includes 71 deaths. However, they said there is no link to the vaccine. The government is now studying the cases for a final study.
U.S. officials are struggling with the problem of thousands of Central American migrants arriving at the southern U.S. border and seeking entry. Many are children who do not have a parent with them. Democratic Party members in the U.S. House of Representatives say they are trying to fix a broken system left behind by the administration of former President Donald Trump. The leaders of the Republican Party in the House say President Joe Biden's administration created a new crisis. Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House of Representatives, called what is going on a Biden border crisis. The Biden administration wants to call what is going on a challenge. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, said it is a humanitarian crisis. Even Trump is talking about it, saying Biden's administration was recklessly eliminating our border. Jen Psaki, Biden's press secretary, said Republicans who say Biden opened the border were absolutely incorrect. However, Roberta Jacobson, who works in the White House, said many people may now be trying to get into the U.S. after Biden took office. She said they think a more humane policy is in place now that Trump is no longer president. She also noted that people who smuggle migrants into the U.S. may have been giving people false information. The Biden administration stopped the building of a border wall, which Trump started during his presidency. However, some policies from the Trump administration have stayed in place. The U.S. continues to prevent some people from coming into the country because of the COVID-19 health crisis. Alejandro Mayorkas is the Homeland Security Secretary. On Tuesday, he said that children coming into the U.S. are vulnerable, and the U.S. has ended a policy of sending them back. The number of children trying to cross the border without adults increased by 60% from January to February. More than 9,400 tried to enter the United States last month. I'm Dan Friedel.
Many VOA Learning English users live in places where it is hard to find someone to practice speaking English with. You may be one of those people, so you may have tried to find people online, even on our website or social media pages. And maybe you found a partner, or maybe you did not. If you have been unlucky in finding a partner, today's education tips is for you. On this program, we offer 4 tips to help you find someone who wants to practice speaking English with you. The first tip is to use Facebook. You might already have a personal account on Facebook and use it to do things like share pictures and connect with friends and family. But maybe you have never joined a Facebook group. Facebook groups are excellent for finding people who share your interests, including English learning. You will want to make sure you join a group whose members are very active. When deciding on a group to join, keep in mind that groups with thousands of members may not be as active as smaller groups. So take some time to look around and then choose a group, or maybe a few. Note that joining a Facebook group is not the same as liking or following a page. Groups are designed to share information and opportunities among members. After joining a group and spending time observing its posts, you will begin to see which members are the most active. If you notice that someone writes a lot of useful comments or questions, they are probably serious about learning English. Consider messaging them directly to ask if they would like to practice speaking English with you. You can practice through Facebook Messenger or video apps like Zoom or Skype. Our next tip is to use Meetup.com. Meetup is a free website that helps people with similar interests find each other and meet in person. Users of the website can be found around the world. Members of language meetup groups often meet in public places such as coffee houses. The coronavirus pandemic has led some groups to meet online or in places where safe social distancing is possible. There are thousands of meetup groups around the world covering thousands of interests. You can also find speakers of every language imaginable. There are English-speaking meetup groups on every continent. Our third tip is to try a language exchange. Language exchanges are unlike usual speaking practices. In a language exchange, a meeting is divided into practicing 2 languages. Suppose, for example, you are a native Portuguese speaker and you want to practice English. Your partner is a native English speaker who wants to practice Portuguese. You and your partner would speak English for 1/2 of the meetings and Portuguese for the other half. Many people that I know have improved speaking skills in their target language through language exchanges. However, other people have found the exchanges a waste of time. There are steps you can take to ensure that you are using your effort and time wisely. For instance, decide on clear goals, choose the right partner, state your expectations, and prepare for your meetings. You can learn more about how to have great language exchanges in an earlier education tips. Our final tip for today is to cast a wide net. That means to try many different things to increase your chances of getting what you want. Tell your friends, family, and coworkers that you are serious about improving your English. Maybe explain your reasons for learning the language. Let them know you are looking for an English speaker to talk to. Ask around your larger community as well. The more people you ask, the more likely and quickly you will find a good practice partner. He or she may not live in your city or even your country, but you can meet each other online. Well, that covers our four tips for finding someone to speak English with. Good luck, and let us know if these methods or others helped you find an English-speaking practice partner. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Kennedy, a Democrat, defeated Republican Vice President Richard Nixon in one of the closest elections in United States history. He took office in January 1961. After 3 months, Kennedy faced a major foreign policy failure. On April 17th, armed Cuban exiles tried to invade Cuba, less than 150 kilometers from the American state of Florida. They had been trained by the Central Intelligence Agency. Their goal was to overthrow the island's communist leader, Fidel Castro. In 1959, he and his guerrilla forces had overthrown Fulgencio Batista, the president who was supported by the United States. The exiles came ashore at Cuba's Bay of Pigs. Most were killed or captured. The last administration, under President Dwight Eisenhower, had planned the invasion, but Kennedy had approved it. After the failure, some Americans again wondered if the 43-year-old president had enough experience to lead the nation. In May 1961, Kennedy went to Paris and met with French President Charles de Gaulle. Kennedy visited France with his wife, Jacqueline, who spoke French and had studied there. In June, Kennedy met in Vienna with Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. Khrushchev did not want to compromise on any issue. He threatened to have the East Germans block all movement into and out of the Allied-controlled western half of Berlin. In November, the East Germans, with Soviet support, started building the Berlin Wall to separate East and West. President Kennedy quickly announced a large increase in American military forces in Germany. Less than a year later came the Cuban Missile Crisis. On October 22, 1962, President Kennedy made an announcement to the American people.
This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere. Upon receiving the first preliminary hard information of this nature, last Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., I directed that our surveillance be stepped up. And having now confirmed and completed our evaluation of the evidence and our decision on a course of action, this government feels obliged to report this new crisis to you in fullest detail. The characteristic of these new missile sites indicate two distinct types of installations. Several of them include medium-range ballistic missiles capable of carrying a nuclear warhead for a distance of more than 1,000 nautical miles. Each of these missiles, in short, is capable of striking Washington, D.C., the Panama Canal, Cape Canaveral, Mexico City, or any other city in the southeastern part of the United States, in Central America, or in the Caribbean area.
Kennedy had a warning for the Soviets.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union.
Kennedy and his national security advisors debated what to do about the Soviet missiles in Cuba. Should the United States try to destroy them? What if some of the nuclear missiles escaped the attack? Kennedy decided to use a naval blockade. He called it a quarantine to prevent any more Soviet ships from reaching Cuba. There were tense negotiations with the Soviets. Khrushchev demanded a promise that the United States would not invade Cuba. Kennedy agreed and did so publicly. Secretly, he also agreed to another demand. He promised that the United States would remove its Jupiter missiles based in Turkey after the crisis was over. The Cuban Missile Crisis lasted 13 days. It raised fears of a nuclear war. But it ended peacefully when the Soviets agreed to remove their missiles from Cuba and turn their ships around. But the Cold War continued. In Asia, the Kennedy administration tried to fight communism in Vietnam by increasing the number of American military advisors there. The United States and the Soviet Union did make some progress on arms control. In 1963, the two nations agreed to ban tests of nuclear weapons except underground. Kennedy also had to deal with domestic issues, including discrimination against blacks. His brother Robert was Attorney General, the nation's top law enforcement official. The Justice Department took legal action against states in the South that violated laws on voting rights. The administration also supported a voter registration campaign to sign up more black voters. Robert Kennedy repeatedly called on National Guard troops to protect blacks when they tried to register to vote or attend white schools. President Kennedy said the situation was causing a moral crisis in America, He decided it was time to propose a new civil rights law that would guarantee equal treatment for blacks in public places and jobs. Congress did not pass a wide-reaching civil rights bill until 1964. By then, Kennedy was no longer president. In November 1963, he traveled to Texas. He hoped to settle a dispute in the Democratic Party in that state. The dispute might have affected his chances for re-election in 1964. Kennedy arrived in Dallas in the late morning of November 22nd. The president and his wife were seated in the back of an open-topped car as his motorcade drove through the city. Suddenly, there were gunshots.
Bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The motorcade raced to Parkland Memorial Hospital, but doctors could do little to save his life. This was how television newsman Walter Cronkite reported the news.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Police quickly arrested a suspect. Lee Harvey Oswald worked in a building near where Kennedy had been shot. People had seen him leave the building with a gun. Lee Harvey Oswald was a man with a strange past. He was a former United States Marine. He was also a communist. He had lived for a while in the Soviet Union and had tried to become a Soviet citizen. He worked for a committee that supported the communist government in Cuba. Police questioned Oswald about the shooting of President Kennedy. He told them he did not do it. After 2 days, officials decided to move him to a different jail. Oswald was being led by two police officers. Suddenly, a man stepped forward. There was a shot. Oswald fell to the ground. Television cameras broadcast the events live. The man who killed Oswald was Jack Ruby. He was a nightclub owner in Dallas. He said he shot Oswald to prevent the Kennedy family from having to live through a trial. A commission investigated the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The Chief Justice of the United States, Earl Warren, led the investigation. In its report, the Warren Commission said that Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone. It said there was no plot to kill the president. Many Americans never accepted that finding. Some blamed Fidel Castro or the Central Intelligence Agency. Others blamed organized crime. President Kennedy was buried in Arlington National Cemetery across the Potomac River from Washington. An eternal flame burns night and day by his grave.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.